Hey, let's pray. God, I'm thankful that you'd bring us to a place where we could hear about transcendent things and just hear about how many things in our life we take for granted. And I pray that you would help us to see the place that we are in life right now and to come to appreciate it and be thankful for it. And I pray these things according to your name. Amen. Ecclesiastes 3:1 says this. Maybe it's over here. There it is. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. This is what we started with last week, and we're in this series called Typecast and realizing there are specific roles that all of us fill for a season. Those seasons might be momentary, or those seasons actually might be perpetual, and you might be in that season forever. The one role that should last forever throughout every other role in our life is the role of friend. We looked at that last week, the role of friend. Today, we're going to look at the role of being single or being unmarried, being available, being hot, being whatever the right descriptor of it is, being somebody who's not in a committed, lifelong, marital relationship. And that verse tells us that there is something to enjoy about every state we're in, and we need to learn to enjoy and value even the state, or especially the state, actually you're going to see in a moment, when you have no other human commitments that trump other human commitments, that there's a certain freedom that's afforded to that. There is a quote I ran across this last week, and it goes like this. It's a kind of cheesy quote. Yesterday is history, tomorrow is the future, today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. Some unknown cheesy person said that. Anybody ever heard that quote before? You know, I thought that, come on, that's such a crock, but I'll put it in there. I'll have some fun with that. And then what do you know? Something happened just a couple days ago. I thought, you know, as cheesy as that thing is, it's absolutely true. Every day is a present. Friday, right before I went to bed, I texted my daughter at college, first year. You know, how are you? Just kind of a rhetorical question. I get back a text while I'm in bed saying, bad. And, you know, you're never sure exactly what texting means or what exactly the heart behind it is. And after about 2 minutes, I thought, I actually might have to make a real phone call after this one. So I called her up, and, you know, a kid in her class just had her over the house a couple weeks ago. Him and some other guys, real good kids, got in a car accident. One of them's now paralyzed from the waist down. The other one's in a medically induced coma. And it just made me realize, oh, my goodness, the state that I'm in right now, or you're in, that all of it is a presence. It is a gift. It is a present. It is a gift. And we rob ourselves of the role that we're in right now or the place in life we are if we keep thinking, what's next? How do I get there? How do I have that? If you are not married, which we're devoting our time with, it is a gift. It is a gift. And some of us who are married are saying, absolutely it is a gift. It is no question that's a gift. We need to value where we are. You know, there's so much in Hollywood, meaning the metaphorical industry that creates mass art for us, mass entertainment. There's so much in Hollywood that is just not real. And of course, the question always exists, do people influence art or does art influence people? You know, which is it? And it's obviously a little of both. But when you think about things that are in Hollywood that are just not true, it just makes you realize, oh my goodness, how can I apply these standards to other things? For instance, here's some ideas. Have you ever noticed in Hollywood or on the movies, television, anybody can eat and drink as much as they want and they never get fat? You ever notice that? Everyone's good looking. Everyone drinks and eats to their heart's content, and nobody has a spare tire and nobody has cottage cheese in the back of the thighs. You ever notice that? That is not realistic. That is Hollywood. That is not real. Have you ever noticed how no matter how much you make in Hollywood, in a sitcom, if you're middle class, everybody has all kinds of space in their house and the best of furniture. In the real world, it doesn't work that way. In the real world, when you're middle class or even upper middle class, you're frustrated you can't get everybody in to the same space. But in Hollywood, everybody always has family beautiful and actually living room beautiful that goes into the huge, massive kitchen. That is not reality. Here's another one. Someone clued me into this years ago, and I've watched, and it's true, every single time. You ever noticed that every scene in the movies that happens outside at night happens right after a rainfall? Every single, I never noticed that. Well, watch next time. There has just been apparently a rainstorm because it creates this beautiful artistic effect with wet pavement, wet blacktop, and wet sidewalks. Always, every single time at night. It never rains during the scene. They're never in a drought so as it would be dry and not as artistically beautiful. Every time, here's what I'm saying. We all realize that things in the movies are not the way they really are. Things on television is not the way it really is. And yet, we will allow these images to influence our sense of reality, and specifically, these images to influence how we ought to date, how we ought to interact with people of the opposite sex. There's a great book that I read a couple years ago, recommended highly. It's called Love, Sex, and Healthy Relationships. Love, Sex, and Lasting Relationships by Chip Ingram. And in it, he talks about the Hollywood formula for how you fall in love and get married. Here's the Hollywood formula. Number one, Hollywood's formula says that you need to find the right person. I just need to find the right person. My soulmate is out there somewhere. I need to find that right person, so I got to go various places or go on the internet or for whatever it is. I got to, number one, find the right person. Number two, I need to fall in love. I can't help it. It just happens. I just feel this ooze come over me because I just found the right person, and boom, I fall in love. And then what I do is I fix all my future hopes and dreams on this person. This person now is going to make me feel good. This person is now going to complete me. This person now is going to take care of me. This person now, and then step four, if you fail, repeat steps 1 to 3. This is the way it works. I just need to look around because the right person's out there. I just got to find them. And then when I find that person, I fall in love. And now my life is going to make sense because now I'm going to be fulfilled. My future makes sense. And then boom, something happens. Now, this is what is always, it is always depicted in the movies and on television. And actually, this will be the default mode through which we date people and interact with people of the opposite sex. And it's why so many of us are frustrated. On the other hand, there's God's formula. I'm going to adapt this formula. It's in his book. It's more from what I've seen. This is God's formula that you see throughout the Bible, and I've actually seen in every person who looks like they have a centered life, and every person who happens to be married that I know that is really healthy and I aspire to be more, be like. Here's God's formula. Number one, fix your hopes and dreams on God. Not another person, not a child, not a person you're dating. Fix your hopes and dreams on God. Number two, walk in love. Instead of falling in love, go about, live your life as a loving being. Walk in the ways of love. And the process, number three, become the right person. Become that. Don't meet the right person. Become the right person. And you know, if you fix your hopes and dreams on God, and he is the one who's trying to fulfill you, and you want him to fulfill you and not somebody else, and if you're a loving person and you are in growth mode, you will be a babe magnet. You will be attracting all kinds of, and if you don't, that's fine, because you fix your hopes and dreams on God, not on somebody else being attracted to you. And then step four, if you fail, repeat steps 1 to 3, because it's still not a fail-safe thing. Two people and difficult things happen. This is God's formula. Now, in the book of 1 Corinthians, actually, I'm going to ask, if you haven't noticed, so I've got a bunch of chairs up here because we have some people with me. And one of the questions I'm going to ask people is, what do you wish someone would have told you a long time ago? What do you wish someone would have told you first? And I had a guy come up to me after the last service and said, you know what I wish someone had told me? I wish someone had told me that marriage isn't a goal. It just should not be a goal. And this is a married guy. And I thought, gosh, that is so true. I thought of it that way. I thought that marriage was a goal. It was something to check off. It was something to look for. It's a goal. No, I want God to be my goal. But when it is a goal, it's impossible to be fulfilled if you don't have that thing. But if God is my goal, and he's fulfilling me, opens up a whole different set of options and of things that can really be powerful. In the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 7, verse 32, it says this, I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife. Ladies, you can say, yes, please. And his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. Men, you say, yes, please. I'm saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you might live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord, fixing your hopes and your devotions, undivided loyalty to the Lord. And what's it saying here right now? There certainly are blessings about being married. We'll talk about that in a couple weeks. But what this is saying here is there are unique opportunities that those of you who are not married have that I don't have. You have a more free life than I have in many ways. You're not concerned about meeting the needs about another person. You're not concerned about another person making a decision that throws a wrench in your life. All you have to worry about is what God's doing in your life and pursuing God, and there's a freedom that comes with that. And this is a blessing. Every role that we play, there are unique blessings that the other role doesn't have. Now, I actually kind of feel very bad right now because I think I've talked about as much as I'm qualified to talk about on being single. I haven't been single since I was 22. I'm 22 years now out of the single world. And I actually, believe it or not, I was not a very good single person either. So I'm talking way above my pay grade at this point. So I need to bring some people up to help with me. We actually have in our midst, believe it or not, real life single people. Yeah, they're actually here. They actually, let's welcome up some of my friends on stage, and they're going to share some of their wisdom with us. Well, let's start down here on my right. Maybe give your name and a little brief bio. And
my name is Michael. I'm 22, and my past is I had a relationship where I dated somebody, and it was long, and it was more committed than it should have been, and it was not honoring to God. And now I'm in a relationship where I'm trying to walk it out as honoring to God as possible. And so I guess from that verse, my job is to please the Lord, since it's not, being married. That's the cutoff, I guess, being married, not dating.
All right, good.
I'm Vicky. I'm 40-ish. I was married in my late 20s. I was married for about 5 or 6 years. I have a 17-year-old son, and I have been single for almost 15 years now.
Someone just said, wow. I wonder what that's about. Yes.
My name is Rachel. I am 23, and I have bought into a lot of lies about being single that have led me to some very poor dating decisions.
My name is Keenan, and I am 34. I've been blessed to date some pretty good women in the past, but because of times in the past where I was immature or had a fear of commitment, I'm single now because of that.
All right. Interesting things have come out of all of our conversations. Very, very good. Let's start with you, Keenan. First of all, say the obvious. Keenan is the first person I ever had a man crush on. I never understood what a man crush was. I do have a man crush on Keenan.
Thanks, man.
I do.
You've been saying that every service.
I have said it every
service. You don't even know how that makes me feel.
Nice.
Well, if you remember to shave sometime, I might be attracted to you too.
It's No Shave November. I can't choose the month.
No Shave November. Keith, would you have expected, like at 22 or 16, would you have expected at 34 that you would still be single?
No, I don't. I don't think I would say that I sat back and said, at 31, 32, I want to be married. I was raised in a house where my family gave me a good model of what it looked like to be married and committed. And I've respected that and wanted that and still want that. But if I was honest with myself, I'd have to say that I chose a lifestyle that said, if you want to be married, the lifestyle that you're choosing is not showing that you want to be married.
So, which is what? Tease that out.
I just really, in times past in particular, I instead of maybe pursuing the relationship and being committed to the relationship, I ran from it and would rather spend my time like hanging out on the weekends or maybe every night of the week sometimes.
Yeah, you're in a unique thing where you're gigging at night and unique environments and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I play in a couple different bands, so I see attractive women often, but it that, you know, where I'm at now single, it's like that doesn't always equate to maybe having the best relationship.
One of the things I feel odd about talking about single, I don't even know that I like that term. I don't even know what the term should be. I generally don't like putting terms or categories to anybody. But it's the best, you know, term I could think of at this point. But I wonder why it is that we get so worked up about being single, or why some people do. I mean, some people, it just seems that it is this driving thing for them. And in some ways, when I look at it, I think, I've got greenish eyes. I don't get all bothered that my eyes aren't brown. I'm almost 6'1". I don't get bothered that I'm not 5'11 or 6'2". I mean, it is what it is. So why is it that for so many do you think that there is this thing that we just can't be satisfied where we are right now?
Well, I think we're a very couple-oriented society. Like, it's just easier to go through life with somebody than without. And there's also, I think, the perception, maybe more so for women than for men, that if you reach a certain point in your life and you're not married yet, or you've been single a long time, something is wrong with you. What is wrong with you? So I think there's those things that you deal with from a societal standpoint.
Michael, talk about that step one in the formula of fixing your hopes and dreams on God, and how that's looked in previous dating relationships versus the one you're in right now.
Yeah, if the goal is to please God, then you're going to be moving towards God in your life. Now, in my previous dating relationship, I was definitely not equally yoked with the person, because she was not going, you know, to God. She was going, a different way, and I couldn't have both, you know. So I ended up following her instead of following God, and so that's a difficult thing.
So the unequally yoked is this term of two oxen that would have a wooden yoke over their neck, and you would want to have two that were of the same strength going the same direction, because if you had one that was significantly stronger than the other or had different desires, as they would pull, that yoke would twist and both of them would choke. And so in the Bible, one of the very clear things is you need to be dating with somebody who's going the same spiritual direction you are. If you're an agnostic, date an agnostic. If you're a Buddhist, go with Buddhists. If you're going after Jesus, you need to be with someone who's going after Jesus. And it sounds actually judgmental, but it's actually for our health. Can you experience how that actually pinches both of you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a part of my life. I mean, that's a pretty big part. I mean, you know, if God's the most important thing in your life, that's a big thing. Or even if you want God to be the most important thing in your life, you need to work towards that. And that was a part of my life I couldn't share with her. And so I couldn't be myself around her. So, that's a big identity problem to be having, to be different people to her, to my parents, to my friends. So, the having somebody who's on the same page as you is very important.
Vicky, in the midst of your divorce and where you are now, you've had a lot of learnings I know you wish you would have had earlier. Talk to us about that.
Well, I've had many years to reflect on this, and I realize I had a great childhood. My parents loved me, and still alive, very blessed with them. But I realize there were a bunch of things from my childhood that didn't really set me up very well. One sounds innocuous enough. My mother was all about fairness. German, you know, all about fairness. And this would play out in identical Christmas gifts for the girls. We all have the same middle name. That's just weird. Tracy Lynn, Sherry Lynn, Vicky Lynn, Wendy Lynn. It plays out today. There's the exact same number of grandchildren pictures in my parents' house so that nobody feels left out. And that was their motivation, to not let anybody feel left out. But what it did to me, as realizing it years later, it created in me a feeling of not ever feeling very special. I wasn't unique in any way. I was the same as my siblings. And so I really looked to anything that would set me apart, so poured my energy into academic success and athletic success, because when I did those things, I seemed to get a little more attention from my parents.
Yeah, Athletica says an interesting thing for you is Vicky's dad. Those of you who are football fans and know, remember John Elway's the drive in the playoffs going 95 yards. Vicky's dad was the defensive coordinator and called all the plays on that drive for him.
He did. I watched that on YouTube last night.
Did you really? Are you serious?
Because you weren't alive.
You weren't even born.
Yeah.
What year were you born, man?
87.
That's when it happened, 87.
Gosh.
But anyways. Wow, we're old.
I am freaking old, man.
But even with that, my dad was a good provider. He wanted to succeed in life, to give us a better life and put us through good schools. And so he started off in high school, college, Canadian Football League, the NFL, always striving to give us a better life. And because of that, I moved 15 times before I went to college, 5 high schools. And, you know, there's lots of great things about that. Been lots of places. I've never met a stranger. But the downside of that is it also created in me a feeling of this very deep feeling of feeling isolated, disconnected, and alone. And to buffer that, I would hide my feelings, because what else are you going to do? You're going to hide your feelings and be the type of person you thought that people who are just meeting you for the first time would want to meet. And then lastly, well-intentioned religion. I was raised Catholic, and it's probably a lot of good things about Catholicism. But for me, I was raised to understand that God is this very faraway God, very impersonal, was really all about the rules and apparently how much I could memorize. And again, it did not instill in me anything that God thought I was special or that, it was based on what I did and not the person that I was. So I got married, married a great guy. He's actually here, I think, at the service with his wife for 12 years. Hey. No, we're really good friends. We really are. The three of us have raised my son. So we really are. But the startling thing to me was a couple years into my marriage, I realized I had these overwhelming feelings of isolation, disconnectedness, and feeling lonely when I was married. Like, that doesn't happen. That's supposed to fix everything.
Yeah, because you found the right person. You've fallen in love, and now your hopes and dreams and aspirations are there, and you all these things that are inner problems should just go away, because that's the formula.
Yes, and I was very devastated by the fact that I concluded I had a broken marriage, and what I realized years later was that I was the one who was broken. In the midst, it took a few more years for my career to fall apart and really hit rock bottom. And it was in the midst of that brokenness when God met me, as he often does in our despair. God met me, and I kind of had to give it all up and stop trying to achieve my own plan so much. And in the midst of that, found God in a meaningful way. And since that time, have never, ever felt disconnected, lonely, and isolated. And so, you know, sounds trite, but found my identity in God and have moved forward from there.
Yeah, you said something before. Lonely, disconnected, isolated people who are unmarried are lonely, disconnected, isolated people who are married. Mm-hmm. Selfish, self-serving people who are unmarried are selfish, self-serving people who are married. You know, I mean, just keep going. We keep thinking it's this magical thing that all of a sudden it will change, but instead we need to be walking in love and becoming that right person. Rachel, talk about some of your baggage with the college you went to, sort of the religious upbringing, and how that did not set you up for success as a single person.
Yeah, I grew up in the church. My dad was in and out of ministry growing up, and then I went to a Christian school where, of course, everyone finds their soulmate your freshman year, and so I had a really weird experience a couple times throughout college of just not recognizing the pressure that was there, just realizing everybody, that just seemed to be what was happening. So the first person you date is probably the person you're supposed to marry, and so you just start dating, and then over time, you've been dating for a while, and it becomes very transactional and just so normal and casual, and it just becomes, like the guy told you earlier, marriage has seemed like a goal. You go to college, you get married, you start having kids, and down the row you go. And so it was a big wake-up call when I started coming to terms with realizing I'd never stopped to think, like, is this the person that God really has for me? Is this a God-centered relationship? Is this something that I really want the rest of my life to be? Or has this just been something that just seemed to fall into place, and so that must be what society tells me I do? I just keep going.
So you're how old right now?
23.
23. And you're not married?
No.
Keenan's single, you know.
I've heard that.
Yes, yeah, okay. But what happens if... I'm sorry, that was slightly inappropriate. I'm sorry for that.
Shocking.
What happens if you never get married? How's that feel for you?
You know, it's weird. I think I have... you haven't asked me this before.
No, I have not.
I have definitely changed my mindset on what I'm looking for when I get married, and have definitely decided that, like Michael's been saying, that the identity in Christ is absolutely the most important thing to me, and I don't think I'd be happy in any marriage that both of us weren't totally rooted in that. And the more I can use this time to make myself rooted in that, it's just a blessing. And so if that happens, the stronger I become there, I would think the desire for marriage would wean off. But I feel like God has put that desire in my heart, and I'm excited for it. And at the same time, if He had to work out in me that it was otherwise, then I trust He'd do that.
How about you? What if you're never married? Time's ticking, you know.
Yes, time's ticking. Thank you, Brian. Thank you. Well, I would say this, you know, 15 years, a long time to be single, but I have had so many blessings come of this time. As I said, I have a 17-year-old son, and so for 15 years of his life, it has just been he and I. And I would never, you know, advocate against a traditional family raising kids, of course, but my circumstances are what they are. And I must say the sweet time that we've had, one-on-one, without any distraction from any, you know, annoying husband around, I have just been able to, just kidding, pour my life and my heart into my son. So that has been a true blessing. That plays out with friends. I have great friends. I can build into them, and they can build into me. I have more time for deeper friendships, and that's been a huge blessing. And probably most importantly, my time with God. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to fit into a busy life, your time with God, and not being married allows me way more freedom and flexibility on that front. So I feel like my journey with God has gone much deeper, much faster than it would have because of that. But I would love to be married. I think God has great things to teach us about Him in marriage. I think there's a holiness of marriage that I would love to experience. And but I do know God's plan is always better than my plans, always. So I'll wait and see what God has for me.
And so you could be content if you're not married.
If that's God's plan, then I would be content with that.
Yeah, good.
I am not content with. I respect that, you know, and I think if God said, you know, like, I don't want you to be married, I'm sure He would work that out in me. But, you know, I would hope to have, you know, a kid or some kids down the line. But I think even further, just being open and honest, if God said, you know, just me and you, that would mean ultimately somewhere down the line, like no intimacy with the woman or no sex for the rest of my life, and that's not going to fly with me. So, like, maybe you should pray that God doesn't, like, call me to do that. Like,
Well, let's talk about the obvious right now, because everyone up here, I've self-selected you because you all have focused your hopes and dreams on God. There's a unique character about you all, but let's back up before we go over some assumptions. Keenan, you know, you can have sex if you're not married. I don't know if you ever figured that out, but that piping still works. So why is that important for you? People in here are thinking that. So what's the deal?
I think that's very tough, but I think that at some point, for me, in trying to be the person I think God wants me to be, the pattern that I should follow is the Bible. And there are things in the Bible that are, you know, there's a lot of things that are just, like, tough to go by. So him saying, you know, be single, no sex, is like, bro, chill. Like, so I mean,
but you're trying to focus on, you're recognizing that
definitely.
You're hoping that's not what's in the future, but,
yeah, but
you're
yeah.
trying the best you can to focus on God.
Exactly.
How about that honesty? How cool is that? Isn't that cool? Michael, speaking of sex, walking in love. That was one of the formulas, walking in love. I know that your previous relationship you were in, you were sexually involved. Your current one, you're aspiring not to. Do you think that that's a reflection on the love that you're giving to the person you're dating? Talk about that.
Yes. I think that, you know, in the previous dating relationship, you know, the justification for the things that we were doing with and to each other was because, you know, well, we love each other, so it's all right. Well, that really depends on what your definition of love is. And there was always something in me that was like, this is not love, I don't think. And after, you know, searching and figuring and hearing God tell me who I am, I mean, he made me, he's going to tell me who I am, and receiving the love he had for me, I started realizing that love is not about what you can get. It's more about, you know, giving worth to other people at the cost of yourself. And so it's been, you know, I mean, love is hard. It's not just like, it's not self-seeking, you know. And so so as I'm now in a situation where both of us are going to Jesus, you know, and it's very freeing because, you know, if it doesn't work out, well, I'm still going towards, you know, God. So.
And your life isn't imploded because now
right.
what? Now it's hit the
like
reset button.
The first point is still the first point. You got your dreams fixed on him. And I mean, I've just been sitting up here thinking, I don't know if like I had a life of singleness. Like I'd like to say like, yeah, if that's the path the Lord had for me or like I would love to say, yeah, I'd do that. But I don't know. I mean, that would be difficult. But
a couple months ago, we had last Wednesday service where we were focused on people who were new believers in Jesus, had recently received the Holy Spirit. And we decided to have everyone on stage who had a role say, what is it you wish someone had first told you when you received Christ? What is it you wish you knew? And everyone gave their thing. And for me, what I wish I knew, I wish someone told me, I wish I knew that there was going to be times when I didn't feel God at all. I wish someone had told me that. Because then when I didn't feel God, I immediately thought, what's wrong with me? I must be doing something wrong. He's mad at me, or I have to do some religious gymnastics. And now I realize I'm confident enough in my relationship. With, there's just seasons where you don't feel God. You don't feel a lot. I wish someone would have told me that. And there was a whole bunch of wisdom that night. Well, let's spin it on the singles. Because I do think that you all are models. I wish I was like all of you when I was single. Because I think you have some learnings for us. What do you wish someone would have told you when you were 12, 16, 18, 20, 42? What do you wish someone would have told you that you now know? We'll start with you, Michael.
Okay. Well, I had great parents who raised me right. So they told me a lot of stuff. So I would preface this with think about this and you know, because you can hear something and it, I heard a lot of stuff that I didn't put into practice, but what somebody told me was if you know that you are going to be following Jesus with your life and ultimately you'd maybe like to end up with a girl who is following Jesus with her life, the best thing to do at that point, if that's your situation, is to know who you are and get your identity in God, because at the end of the day, you're going to be most attractive to the opposite sex if you're getting your identity in God, because you're not looking to them to fulfill your needs. You have your needs met by God. And I mean, I've been, you know, thinking about that and doing that for a bit now, and I think it's good.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice.
It's a very attractive thing, let alone a healthy thing, that when God is doing for you what no one else can do. And I'll say this, just go to the marriage for a second. Married folks, this is why your marriage is bad right now. If you are expecting your spouse to fulfill you, you are set up for a frustrating marriage. Your spouse was never designed to be your hopes and aspirations. Your spouse was never to be the one to fulfill you. That is God. And when you have two people who are going after God, the marriage works. But when somebody is hoping your happiness is contingent upon somebody else doing what you need them to do, it is going to be a hard road to marriage. This thing works equally both ways. What do you wish someone told you?
You know, I wish someone had explained things to me in a more meaningful way around sexual purity. You know, I was raised Catholic, so I certainly knew what all the rules were supposed to be, but you don't even understand what oversex culture we live in, you know, and if you don't, you should sit with your teenage son and watch television. I mean, it is unbelievable. It just makes sex so insignificant and so casual and so assumptive. And I wish I had understood at a very deep level that God makes those parameters for us for our own benefit. It is not to hurt us. It's not to keep us away from fun times. But that God really has a plan, and you need the safety of marriage, and you need the commitment of marriage to really be fulfilled in the greatest intimacy that you can have with someone. And I wish I had understood that at a much younger age. Mm-hmm.
I wish someone had told me the dangers of opposite sex friendships and how quickly they can become very, very messy. Definitely my greatest pain in dating has come from friendships that I like to really get to know people. I really care about them, and I just want to go deep, and I want to know everything about their life. And then suddenly I'm in a really deep, messy, emotional connection to people that should just be a little more sacred. And so I'll know people very well, and then when it comes to opposite sex friendships, if at some point one person would be to develop feelings, just hypothetically, then there is this, I'm very prone to guilt, I'm very prone to other emotions, because I can't separate what is just friendship, but I'm emotionally, I've already become so intimate with them that can be confused as feelings. And I've ended up in a few relationships that I never would have been in otherwise if I'd guarded that, both my heart and his, from the beginning and just set those lines a lot more clearly.
You mentioned earlier you had a dad who was in ministry. Did your dad pray for your future spouse with you?
No, I don't.
That's a good dad right there. I made that mistake early on. I had some well-intentioned people say, hey, pray with your kids when they're little, pray that for their future spouse, pray all this stuff. And I finally came into conviction and realized that's a bad idea for a number of reasons. I'm brainwashing my kids very early age that until you're married, you really haven't arrived yet. And therefore, they're going to judge every person they're dating, and they're by that whole thing. It's ridiculous. Not only that, there's a lot of people who are going to have great lives who are never married, and in the Bible, who are never. Why am I setting this up as the standard? And then the second thing is, then every person they date, they're starting to feel like, oh, maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the one. And then if they happen to keep themselves a virgin when they get married and they marry somebody who is not a virgin, we would pray, like, you know, help the person overcome sexual temptation. Then they're feeling like there's a failure there because I did it and you did. And I realized this is good intentions, but just bad, bad, bad. If we can just level this and say, don't make such a big deal and goal of marriage. God will be there. Go after him and allow this stuff to fall into place. I'm good. I'm glad your dad was better than me. Kenan, what about you?
I think I wish somebody would have taught me, or at least said, you know, learn how to work out patience and learn the importance of commitment. In past relationships, I have been the type of person that, you know, if the girl I was seeing or dating said or did something I didn't like, instead of working it out and staying committed, I would just kind of bail the situation. And so where I am now in my walk with God, he continually reminds me of how patient he is with me and how I continue to mess up at times, and he's still there for me. And he's working out in me to say, you know, the next relationship you get in, make sure that you have a desire to be patient and stay committed and put forth a good effort to it.
Hey, we're thankful for all you guys putting your heart into this whole thing. You guys have done phenomenal. Let's thank these guys for sharing themselves with us. Really. Jeremiah 29:11 says this, It says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. This says, God says, look, even if you don't like what's happening in your life right now, and maybe some of the things that we have in our lives right now are really not ultimate or ideal, this says that God is not holding out on me. That God's ultimate plans are to prosper me, to take me to new places. That might not happen the next year. That might not happen the next decade. That might not even happen this lifetime. Really, there is such a thing as an eternity. But the heart of this thing is that God does have our best desires as his desires. He has our interests as his interests. And so whatever role we're in right now is a beautiful thing when we can stop and we can be thankful. And how can we be thankful? If we say, God, I'm focusing on you, and if I have you, that's enough. Why don't we stand right now? We're going to do a song that's going to be a prayer for us. Some of us, this is something that we need to say to God and say to ourselves. Others of us, we don't believe the song, but you just need to soak it in. And others of us, we read these words and we think, I know that's true. I don't believe that, but I would like to believe that. And so maybe I want to sing this just to sort of transform my heart. God, I know that all of my frustration in life comes when I'm not satisfied with where I am right now. Comes when I'm not satisfied with my family, I'm not satisfied with my money, I'm not satisfied with my health, I'm not satisfied with whatever. It's always not being thankful for what I have and saying to you, you're enough. God, hear my words and our words in here right now as we recenter ourselves and say, you're enough.